So my title is World Gone Mad, What Can Triratna Buddhists Offer? Originally it was What Can Buddhists Offer, and then I thought, no, this is Triratna Day, let's be more specific, what can we as a community offer? So this idea that the world is mad, I imagine, resonates for most of us with all the craziness that is going on. In fact, the idea that the world is mad is not at all new. And there's a saying which is attributed to the Buddha. In fact, it seems, from my research, it seems to be from someone called Buddha Gosha, who lived many, many centuries after the Buddha. But I think it stands, Buddha Gosha means the voice of the Buddha, and is someone we draw from quite a bit in this movement. All worldlings are mad. Basically, if you don't have insight, if you're not enlightened, you are kind of mad. We are kind of mad. So what's that about? Is that perhaps a bit unkind to us poor people? So what's being pointed at is that we don't really understand the way things work, and we have expectations that that don't stand up to scrutiny, and yet we behave in the same ways, but we expect different results, and that's kind of a definition of madness. So I was thinking, maybe madness is too strong a word, but anyway, bear with me. I was thinking about me stepping into the bathroom in the morning, and there's the scales, and I'm thinking, oh, I wonder if I've lost a pound or two. And then I kind of know that I was snacking on biscuits rather than apples. And it's actually, that's not how this thing works. And yet there's this desire for it to somehow be different magically. So behaving in certain ways, which actually all the evidence shows us has certain outcomes, and yet we don't quite believe that. So this is what a lot of the Buddha's teaching was pointing at. We don't quite get what occurs as a result of our thoughts and our speech and our actions. That there's a certain logic according to Dharma teachings. Skillful actions, those based in skillful states of mind, have positive consequences for ourselves and the world. And actions that are based in the three root poisons, greed, desire, wanting things to go our way, wanting to get stuff for ourselves, ill will, hatred, that sort of sense of othering, we could say, and ignorance, delusion, just having these kind of ideas that just don't stand up to scrutiny. So these three root poisons is, in a sense, the sort of core thing that the Buddha was pointing at. And we can see these writ large in the world, can we not? The destruction wrought by greed, I don't think has ever been more visible. You know, and we have this, well, talk about insane, this particular consumer capitalist economy that is just so rapacious. Hatred, ill will. I heard someone from a particular political administration on the radio the other day explaining that they were bombing a certain country because they wanted to bring about world peace. So I don't know if that person really believed that. Maybe they did, but you know, this, we don't have to look far, do we, to see the madness of it all, the deluded nature of, well, what's actually going to come of these actions? What's really going to proliferate in the world when we come from these root poisons? Now, the issue is, it's not just all those other people out there, the obvious ones, who are wreaking havoc on a massive scale. We actually also have those poisons within us. I want you to bring in a bit of some contemporary thinkers as well as Buddhist teachings. And Joanna Macy, a wonderful writer, activist, very strongly influenced by Buddhism. She had this, she and her colleagues had this idea of a great turning, you know, moving towards a healthier society, a sustainable, life-sustaining, life-supporting society, and that there are different aspects to this, one of which being holding actions, so probably really your kind of activist area, going out and trying to stop the bad stuff. People, I know there's quite a lot, there's a couple of legal groups who are trying to change laws that are, you know, in a way that is going to be helpful, and so on. So this is a whole area, and you know, it's fantastic that people are involved in these activities and, you know, trying to hold out against the forces of destruction, really. But then there's another, creating alternatives. So that's another thing we can put our energy into, building new ways of living, building other kinds of communities that are not based on, or at least not so strongly based on, those poisons. And this has to be supported, according to Joanna Macy and me, I agree, by shifts in consciousness, a profound transformation in the underlying views that we hold. So moving away from a sense that I'm separate, I sort myself out, how I treat you doesn't matter, or you know, it's not like that. We're deeply, deeply connected with one another. And the more awareness we cultivate, the more that becomes obvious. So I would say these two are more the sort of realm of what we're doing here in Tru Ratna, in the Brighton Buddhist Centre. We're trying to create, Sangharakshita gave a talk about the new society. We've got a series of talks coming up in May, which you're probably aware of, revisiting some of these themes. But he was a very—he was a strong advocate of, we have to go beyond practicing as an individual. We have to create a culture collectively if we're going to have any positive influence. So I was just thinking about this, these two, creating alternatives and the shift in consciousness. And I found myself thinking about George Orwell's Animal Farm.
Oh, yeah.
So in the Animal Farm, in the beginning, this is from the point of view of the animals, the humans are the bad guys, the humans are sort of doing all this stuff. I mean, it's many, many years since I read it, so I don't remember the details. And the animals decide to have a revolution to overthrow the oppressors and to do their own thing. And then the pigs on the farm, pigs are very intelligent, the pigs are the ones to take over from the humans. But what happens is, before long, the pigs are behaving in exactly the same way that the humans were. So they tried to change the system without changing consciousness. and it doesn't work. And I think we see this over and over again. You know, we want to create a different world, but if we still have the same mindset that's underlying all the actions, because according to, again, core Buddhist teaching, isn't it, that consciousness determines being, that everything that occurs starts in the mind. It starts as an impulse, a thought, a view that becomes expressed in words, that becomes a culture, that becomes actions, for better or for worse. I'd like to share, I've had a bit of a little insight into what Buddhist practice is really about. That doesn't sound too grand. I think I had this idea that I was supposed to be getting rid of greed, hatred, and ignorance, sort of somehow edit it out as I go. And what I've realized is that it's more about recognizing these forces at work and observing what happens, where does this lead to? That's really where the insight comes from. It's not like because we're Buddhists, we're suddenly going to be magically free of these tendencies. We're human. This is what the Buddha was observing right up to his enlightenment. Okay, what happens when I act from selfish desire as opposed to, you know, sensitivity to another person? Or, you know, what happens if I push things to go my way rather than be open to explore and negotiate, and so on. So this actually takes a lot of guts to acknowledge that it's the bad stuff isn't just out there, it's in here as well. We all have these tendencies. And I will share with you another thing. This is a confession. I do refills at my local health food shop, and I went for a refill, shampoo or whatever it was, and I just had this greedy moment. I don't know if you've seen the Lord of the Rings films. There's a bit where the ring suddenly has an effect and their eyes go sort of go yellow, and there's this kind of moment where they're under the influence of something not so good. So when I was thinking about it, I thought, oh, it's a bit like that. And I just suddenly, I wanted to get a bit more, and I had a bigger bottle. So that sort of mindset, oh, I could get away with it. I could just get a bit more of shampoo. And anyway, I took it to the counter, and the guy could immediately see that I'd taken more than half a litre. And I immediately just felt like, what a stupid thing to do, and embarrassing. And I still feel slightly embarrassed because he's still there, of course, a year later, you know. Anyway, there you go. It's the kind of thing that happens sometimes. And I was thinking about it afterwards, and I was thinking, okay, it was just a greedy moment. It's not such a big deal. And then I thought, no, actually, greed is destroying sustainable life on this planet very visibly. It's not a small thing. It's actually a big thing. And that just felt like a really useful insight, you know? So there's something about, yeah, being honest about this stuff. And of course, when we see the bad stuff as being all out there, that leads into that kind of othering, blame, various not so helpful things that are not really going to move things in the right direction. What do we do about any of this? Yeah, so talking about the poisons, so just to bring in the positive, very famous quote, which you probably heard, know well, not by hatred is hatred ever pacified, is pacified by love. This is the eternal law. You don't get world peace through bombing a nation state. That's just not how it works. You don't get peace by shouting and throwing rocks at somebody and shouting for peace. You know, there's a logic, which is kind of obvious when you look at it. So we're looking at our underlying, what drives us, our motivations, and we're trying to align with something more more helpful. I want you to bring in another I wanted to bring in another bit of theory that I've personally found really helpful. So this is from someone called Stephen Covey, who wrote a book that was doing the rounds around Triratna some years ago. I remember lots of people reading. This is called The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. And he's got this model, which I find I come back to again and again. And particularly in this era of, you know, the global news round 24/7 on your phone and all that, I find this more relevant than ever. So he's got these three circles, concentric circles. The outer circle is the circle of concern. It's all the stuff that we care about. Anything that fits in that category, which, you know, is, of course, is potentially vast. Then the next circle is the circle of influence. So it's the things that we may be able to have some effect on. And then the central circle is the circle of control. I was thinking about this. I don't quite like the word control. Maybe agency. Anyway, that works better for me. So what are the things that we can actually do something about or have some influence on? And Stephen Covey's point, this came out of this kind of management theory, it's just ordinary life running your organization or whatever, that if we spend too much of our attention in the area of concern that we have no control over, we have no agency, we are going to be stressed. We're going to be overwhelmed. We're probably going to go into blame, negative states of mind. Because there's that. I think the thing that happens for me is it's a sort of furious, helpless feeling. Like, I feel absolutely enraged, but there's nothing I can do about this. And I'm walking around in a bad state because I read this on the news. It's not doing anything about the issue, certainly not helping me, not helping my partner, who I just sort of moaned at, you know. So, yeah. Good to be aware of the circle of concern, but not to be putting too much of our attention there, because it's not very helpful. I find that really useful to remember. So from a Buddhist point of view, where can we have agency? Where can we have control? Well, but I think there's an agreement that we do have a sense of agency and that we can have some control over how we react to things, what we bring to the situation, what mental states we allow to proliferate in the mind, what conditions we place ourselves in. So you've decided to come here today. That's having a particular effect. So there are these areas where, this is from a Buddhist perspective, we can actually have quite a degree of agency in what happens. And of course, this ripples out. This is where the influence happens. You know, we have an effect on other people. The way we are is constantly affecting the rest of the world. And that may be something that we don't really notice or think about, but it's the truth. And of course, this is where it tips over from being individual practice to something that becomes much more powerful when it's collective, that sense of influence on the world. I'm here today, I'm in my mid-60s, I have thought a lot about what's a good use of my energy and my attention at this time in my life. And the reason I'm here is because I think this is the best thing I could be doing. I could be out protesting or doing something else, but I'm choosing this because my sense is that the Brighton Buddhist Centre does have a real influence in this town, and I'm sure wider, that Tri Ratna does have a real influence in the world. And the more I think about it, the more confident I am. And so we've got this beautiful shrine, as is so often the case, and the thousand-armed Avalokiteshvara is this image of Avalokiteshvara as the bodhisattva of compassion. And he has these thousand arms reaching out into the world. And this is an image for our order and for our movement more widely, that each of us, you know, in a sense, is part of a bigger body, if you like that. Maybe that doesn't work for you, but it's something that we can do together that we couldn't possibly do on our own. We can have a more benign influence in the world, and we do. I'm absolutely sure of that. People come into this room, they do a meditation and their lunchtime or whatever, and they leave in a different state, and it works. It works. Okay, I'll just touch on one other thing. I just wanted to talk a little bit about culture. Again, this is something Sangharakshita was very interested in. A very cultured person himself. So we're part of a bigger culture, aren't we? We communicate with others, we go online, we write things, all that stuff. We are influenced by the culture that we're part of, and we have an influence on it. Surprising things happen in the culture, and I've been, I have been pretty shocked by certain shifts in the culture over the last 10 years or so. Things normalised now that would have been unthinkable a decade ago, certainly in the circles I moved in. Culture is a big deal. And I was remembering the Falklands War. Some of us older folk might remember. I remember being really shocked at the time at what a strong, it was like there was this sort of big wave went through the UK, certain sections of it, quite big sections of it. And it was all bash the Argies, you know, it was this kind of war spirit was suddenly among us. And it was intense. And of course, governments act when people, you know, well, they do things to try and get people behind them, but they also act, you know, when people come behind them. And we ended up bombing a ship full of Argentinians, all of whom died, I believe. So, yeah, that was something, a not so great example of culture, you know, something shared, something that's beyond the individual, that's the kind of energy that is abroad, and this obviously has a big effect, as we can see. Looking at something a bit more wholesome and something that we might prefer, the Buddha had some ideas about how to create a positive, supportive culture. So this thing, our individual practice moves into something collective, something shared, as is happening now. And then that moves into something even more kind of generalised and perhaps a bit less tangible, but in a way it's also very tangible, the whole culture that we're part of and that we're co-creating. So the four Sangha Vastus is a Buddhist teaching on how to create positive community within the Sangha, within whoever wants to be part of it. So very briefly, generosity, that spirit of wanting to give, wanting to share. It's just such a lovely vibe to be around. I don't think I need to say any more about that. Kindly speech. Speech matters. How we address people matters. What we write matters. Do we think before we click send and so on? All of this has a big effect. And of course, one of the things that's happened with culture is that certain things happen online that probably wouldn't really happen if you're face to face with somebody. So it takes a bit of imagination, really. Beneficial activity, that's anything that is helpful to people, but particularly sharing the Dharma and things that are going to help them to grow spiritually, which obviously is, you know, there are other organisations doing all sorts of helpful things, but that's really what our focus is here. And then exemplification, which is what I didn't do in the health food shop that day, and what I aspire to do, you know, another time. And of course, those humiliations, those embarrassments are really useful, because I haven't forgotten that. It was just a little moment, but I just thought, this is not really who I want to be, you know. So, yeah, as best we can. We're not going to get it right all the time. And there's a need for forgiveness and patience and so on this path. So, yeah, just to close with a poem from Bhante, Sangharachita. And so there's been a little bit of exploration of where do we have agency, where do we have influence, and so on. And this is called Secret Wings. You may have heard it before. And I really feel there's something very kind of stirring in what he's saying here. And it's a sort of, well, obviously not a call to arms, but maybe a call to agency, a call to feel, recognize the power that we actually do have within ourselves. So, Secret Wings. We cry that we are weak, although we will not stir our secret wings. The world is dark because we are blind to the starriness of things. We pluck our rainbow-tinted plumes and with their heaven-born beauty try to fledge nocturnal shafts and then complain, alas, we cannot fly. We mutter, all is dust, or else with mocking words accost the wise. Show us the sun that shines beyond the veil, and then we close our eyes. To powers above and powers beneath, in quest of truth men sue for aid, who stand athwart the light and fear the shadow that themselves have made. Oh, cry no more that you are weak, but stir and spread your secret wings, and say the world is bright because we glimpse the starriness of things. Soar with your rainbow plumes and reach that near-far land where all are one, where beauty's face is eye unveiled, and every star shall be a sun.